Following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance. You should experience lots of explosions with no body parts. Parents should be ready to cover their ears.
They don't appear to be
This is a Look and See audio production, where entertainment is always free.
Time for the Broken Sea Audio Production OTR Swag Cast.
Welcome back to the Swag Cast. This is Lothar Tuppen, and Bill and I are in the wilderness. On location, so to speak, doing some experiential research into tonight's subject. It's Bill's turn to hunt down dinner, so I'll introduce tonight's show while he's rustling up something tasty. That sounds promising. Tonight's show is about the relationship between wolf and human, often a very intimate relationship. Some of humanity's earliest cross-cultural cultic practices have revolved around embodying the power and skills of great predators and channeling that power for hunting or war. And the wolf, an animal whose history and evolution is strongly interwoven with our own, is one of the predators that humans have both honored and feared the most. Is such an embodiment a blessing or a curse? That's for you to decide, dear listener. But we will offer you three case studies to help inform your decisions. The radio play, The Night of the Wolf, from the CBS Radio Mystery Theater, posits some interesting questions about the relationship we all have with the beast within. Another CBS Radio Mystery Theater play, The White Wolf, reminds us that our passions evoke primal responses, no matter how well rationalized they are by our human intellect. And finally, the Vilkman theory from the 1970s radio show Crisis reminds us that, you know, I think I'm going to just let that one speak for itself. Bill's back. Enjoy the shows, and good hunting.
Lothar, I got dinner!
G. Marshall. Over and over, the philosophers ask the same questions. In all times, in all places, for all men, the mysteries remain. What is life? What is death? From whence do we come and where do we go? The ignorant barbaric savage bows to the sun and says, "Behold, God." Whereas we, sophisticated, civilized, consider the sun as energy expressed in formulae and equations. But do we really know any more about the sun than he does? Our mystery drama, The Night of the Wolf, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Sam Dan and stars Michael Tolan. It is sponsored in part by imported Vigna Rosé wine and Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One. We are in a bright, bustling city in our own southwest. A new city, but an old settlement. Almost 100 years before the pilgrims landed in Massachusetts, the Spanish adventurers came here in quest of gold. And when they found none, they went away. After a while, the conquistadors were succeeded by a new breed of explorers who understood that gold doesn't have to be hard and yellow. Gold can also be liquid and black. And thus, a new city was built here. A gleaming city of metal and glass. A new city, but not the first city. For thousands of years, men of many kinds and various colors have built cities here. Cities that have flourished and vanished. Right now, it is an early evening during the spring, and we find ourselves in a museum gallery, which features an exhibition of the primitive cultures of those early years.
Terry.
Yeah?
Fix your top shirt button.
But it's hot in here.
Close your collar and pull up your tie. You look like an ape.
Okay.
Don't embarrass me in front of my friends.
Oh, hello, Colonel McKeever. Hello.
Terry, don't look so bored.
Enid, I don't look like nothing.
A little culture won't kill you.
Why do you make me come to these things, Enid?
Because everyone who is anyone is here.
Yeah, okay.
And you're not to touch a drop.
Now, look.
You are to keep away from the refreshment table. Do you understand?
Yeah.
In a moment, Colonel.
Colonel McKeever wants to ask me something. Terry, can I trust you to stay here?
Of course.
Don't wander off and make a fool of yourself, and don't touch a drop of liquor.
Okay.
Terry? Oh.
Why do I always have to look for you? Colonel McKeever wants to talk with you.
Yeah.
Terry, what are you staring at? What's so fascinating about that shabby old thing? It looks like a little old lady's faded bathrobe.
Well, it isn't.
Oh, of course it isn't. I can read. Ancient ceremonial robe. Said to belong to a high priest of the Wolf Clan. Possibly Mojave or kindred tribe. Well, what's so all-fired interesting about it?
Shut up.
What did you say?
I said, shut up.
Do you mean you're telling me to...
Who says I can't tell you to shut up?
I warn you, Terry, do not make a scene.
You know something? I think I will make a scene.
Terry, have you gone mad?
Maybe.
Let's get out of here quickly. We won't even wait for the car to come.
We won't?
We'll hail a cab, and I'll...
And
you...
what?
I'll take you to a doctor.
Why?
Because something has come over you.
Maybe something has.
People are starting to stare at us.
Well, so what?
Terry!
You! Hey, you over there! What are you looking at?
Terry, you're embarrassing me.
I mean you. You, the fat slob with a face like a pig.
Terry, it's Colonel McKeever. Terry, we've got to leave here.
Enid, we ain't going nowhere.
I demand that you...
Shut up! Well, what are you looking at, huh? You know me? I'm Terry Jessup. 10 years all-pro middle linebacker till I busted my knee. And I got so scared... But I had to marry this rich broad.
Terry! Terry, you've gone mad!
I let her father buy me. I let her old man buy me.
Terry,
and break
you're
me.
Drunk!
You ruined me! You ruined me, you and your old man. You used me. My name, my reputation, you used me to sell that crooked stock of yours, those dry wells.
Please, somebody, call an ambulance.
I haven't got a real friend in the world because of you.
Oh, he's terribly
ill. That's why... I'm gonna kill you!
Help me!
Don't let anybody make a move! I'll break anybody in half who tries to stop me!
Terry, put down that knife!
Sacrificial knife! 1,000 years old! Still good!
No, Terry,
don't! Still got a point! Look, the point, it's still... Good!
Oh, help! He killed her!
I told you. Yeah.
They got him!
I killed her. Maybe somebody ought to call the cops. I don't know why, Lieutenant. I don't know.
Just answer this. How long have you wanted to do it?
Why, I never wanted to do it. I just...
Yeah?
Well, something just came over me, that's all.
That's not true.
I swear, Lieutenant...
No, you forget. You killed her in front of 100 witnesses. You said that her old man bought you.
I never said any such thing.
Now, don't fight it, Terry. 100 people heard you.
But I don't remember saying it.
Do you believe it?
No, I don't believe it. Why would I...
You said they used you to sell a phony stock.
But how could
I... Terry, I wouldn't say this if I didn't get it from people who were standing there. You said that you lost all your real friends because of them.
It's crazy.
That's what you said.
Well, how could I say a thing like that? I was in love with her.
Still in awe, Terry. You killed her. Why?
I don't know. I was so much in love with her, Lieutenant. I mean it. She was the kind of woman that I wanted all my life. Girl with class.
Sure. But those words you said to her, that anger that made you say them, where did the words and the anger come from?
I'm telling you, I don't know, Lieutenant. I must have been out of my head.
Sure.
Something came over me.
What?
I got scared. It was like nothing I ever felt before.
Like what?
Something in that place. Just something in that museum. Something wild.
Come on, Terry. What could be wild in a museum?
It was like something set my mind on fire. And the words that everybody heard me say, I didn't even know I was saying them.
And did you know you killed her?
It was like something had to be driven out of me. You understand?
No.
Something that was wrong, something that had to die, and if she wasn't standing there, I would have killed myself.
Yeah, yeah.
There's something in that place.
Sure.
Believe me. You gotta believe me.
I'm not the one who has to believe you. A judge and a jury has to believe you.
It's in that place, Lieutenant. Something is in that place.
Now, Miss Atkins, you were here last night. You saw what happened.
I've already told you, Lieutenant.
Terry Jessup says that something came over him.
Oh, I'm sure something did.
He says something in this place, something here in this museum, drove him wild.
Something in here?
Yes, Miss Atkins. Now, what is there here that could do
Look
that?
Look for yourself. We have pictures on the walls. We have some sculptures, some artifacts.
Has anything unusual ever happened here before?
Well, now, what unusual thing could ever happen in a museum?
Yeah, that's what I figured. Well, Miss Atkins, I guess that's all.
Although...
Yes?
Well, this is of absolutely no use to you in terms of last night, but... Well, we did have an incident here, well, 3 weeks ago. We had a fist fight.
A what?
Uh-huh. There were a party of four. Two men, two women. And suddenly, the men started a violent fight. Unfortunately, the guards were able to restrain them.
Well, what did you do?
Well, the guards hustled them out of the building, but the two men kept going at it on the street. Finally, the police came.
And then what?
Well, I don't know. It's just that you asked me about unusual things. And since we have so few of them, well, almost anything would stick in my memory. Yes, it was exactly 3 weeks ago. And then there was another incident.
When?
Well, that's the peculiar thing about it. It was just about... No, it was exactly 3 weeks before that.
You sure?
Yes, I remember because it was the first of the month. And the first day of this special early American Indian exhibit.
What happened?
Well, there was a man. And he was standing... Well, right where Jessup was standing, and also right where those other two men were standing, the exact same spot.
And?
He was an elderly, dignified, well-dressed man. And all of a sudden he shouted, "I'm wrong, I wasted my life." And with that he emptied his pockets, he threw his watch and his ring and all his money away. And then he started to take off his clothes.
And then what?
Well, the guards just restrained him, and he was taken to the hospital. So... Well, all I can deduce from all of this is that every 3 weeks for the last 9 weeks, we've had some kind of violent situation. Does any of this help you?
It's interesting, but I don't see where it can take us.
Oh, well, I'm sorry you couldn't learn anything, Lieutenant Miller. Do you have any further questions?
Just one. What time do you get off?
6.
That's exactly 15 minutes from now.
Mm-mm. Your watch is slow. It's less than 10.
How about some dinner?
I thought you'd never ask.
Oh, Georgie?
Yeah, it's me. Did I wake you?
Oh, no. Had you supper?
Yeah.
What did you eat?
Oh, I don't know. I just grabbed this sandwich on the run.
Oh, you shouldn't do that, Georgie. You've got to have a balanced diet. That's why I'd like you to eat at home when I can make sure.
Okay, Myra.
Did you put the money in the checking account? Georgie, you've got to talk to Jerry. He won't do his homework, and the teacher sent home another note. Jenny has to see an orthodontist, I think.
Okay. I'll take care of everything.
When?
Starting Sunday. I get 3 days off.
No, but you never take your time
off. I can't just walk off in the middle of a case, Myra.
Where were you tonight?
Where was I tonight? Where do you think I was tonight? I was with some beautiful blonde. We had cocktails and dinner. Then we went dancing afterwards at a nightclub. And then we wound up the evening in her bachelor pad.
I'm sorry, Georgie. Oh, I know it sounds like I'm nagging you all the time, but there's just too much for me to do around here, all by myself.
I know, but, honey, once I make captain, you'll see everything will be okay.
You used to say that before you made lieutenant.
Yeah, but just wait. Everything will work out.
Sure, I know it will. I'll tell you what. I'll make us a snack, and we can sit up and talk.
Now, honey, I'm beat. It's been a long, long day, and I got to get an early start in the morning. You understand?
Sure, Georgie. I understand.
That's what we need in this world. More understanding wives. Well, we've been weaving several threads here, and it seems that the museum appears to be central to all of them. And this museum will have a few more interesting, if somewhat deadly, exhibits on display for us when I return shortly with Act Two. The other night, Terry Jessup, an ex-football player who was considered to be, for all his size, a rather calm and gentle person, suddenly went berserk and murdered his wife. This came as a surprise for two reasons. First, everyone had always assumed that he worshipped her. Second, he killed her in a museum, of all places.
You going to be home for supper, Georgie?
I don't know, Myra. I'll have to call you.
Why don't I just figure you won't be, as usual?
That might be best.
Well, promise me you'll eat.
Oh, sure.
Honey, you're at the age where a man can start to get all kinds of things wrong if he doesn't watch himself.
I'll take care of myself, Myra. Look, honey, I know you got the kids all day in the house, but...
But what? Oh, it's just how it works out. You've got your job. I have to put up with it.
Well, that's just it. You say you have to put up with it.
Well, I do, don't I? Like these other men in this neighborhood, they have jobs out at 9, home at 5, Saturday and Sunday off, and that's it.
Well, you knew I didn't have that kind of job when you married me. You knew what life would be like on the force.
I also knew some 9-to-5 cops.
Yes, and you knew I wasn't one of them.
Honey, I just wish you didn't have to work so hard.
But I like to work hard. You know your problem?
I don't have a problem.
You should develop some interests.
I've got plenty to do around here.
No, I mean away from here. Something that you do for yourself. So you can also develop as a person.
Georgie, all I asked you was if you were coming home for supper.
I'll try.
Look, if we eat early, maybe you can help me paint the floor of the basement. Oh, honey, and the cold water faucet in the downstairs tub has to be fixed.
Look, I'll tell you what. You make a list of all that stuff, and I'll take care of it.
You know, Georgie, you never talk to me about your work. Maybe that's what's wrong with us.
I didn't think there was anything wrong with us.
Well, I was reading in a magazine, a wife should share more of what her husband does.
Well, you know about this football player who killed his wife.
Oh, if there's one sport that leaves me cold, it's football.
He says something in the museum made him do it.
What?
I guess you could say some spirit.
Oh, he must be crazy.
No, it could be true.
Georgie, are you crazy?
Honey, when you're a homicide detective, anything has to be considered.
Don't say a word of this to anybody else. They'll say you're nuts.
No, but there's evidence.
Evidence? How can there be evidence?
Other people.
Look, you can find nuts anywhere who will... Oh, honey, on your way home tonight, pick up a gallon of deck paint. Get a light gray, will you, dear? Don't forget.
No, I won't forget.
Hi.
Hello, Polly. You busy?
Swamped.
Maybe I better come back another time.
Oh, you do that.
I shouldn't be here, Polly.
I won't say a word.
We agreed last night. It mustn't go anywhere.
Oh, yes. We agreed.
That last night would have to be the end of it.
I know.
But the real reason I'm here is this does happen to be the scene of the crime.
That's true.
Something in this place made Terry Jessup kill his wife, made those other people go crazy.
Something?
I don't know too much about it, but it could be some kind of spirit. You think I'm crazy?
No.
Now, the way I figure it, these tribes, you know, they believed in magic. It was their religion. Maybe there was some truth in it for them. And so...
Well, go ahead.
And so these things, these knives and clothes and the things here, the magic could still be in them. Or on them or something. Now you go ahead and call the guys in the white coats.
I'll do no such thing. I always believed in that myself.
But you're educated.
So are you.
I don't have the books.
You don't need the books. Come here.
Polly, it can't go anywhere.
Where does it have to go? It's already arrived.
Polly, can I see you tonight?
Why do you feel you have to ask?
Captain Prescott. Oh. Yeah, I'll see him. Morning, Georgie. Sit down.
Listen, Prescott, why am I being assigned to the Kenilworth thing?
Because it's a good live murder and just a job for a smart detective like you.
But I'm still with the museum killing.
What is it with you? Jessup is already in the cooler waiting for his trial. It's gone past.
But we have to find out why he did it.
No, that's going to be for the psychiatrist to rumble about. What a field day those birds are going to have.
Look, I'm running down an angle.
Yeah?
At the museum.
Yeah, yeah. I know her name, too. Polly Atkins.
What are you talking about?
Come on, Georgie. Everybody knows about it. Everybody except Myra, maybe.
I don't know what's happened to me. Look, it's the first time I ever stepped out of line. You have to believe that.
Okay. I believe it.
And I didn't even plan it. I didn't even know I was doing it. I just asked her out before I could even think of what I was saying.
You still in love with Myra?
Yes.
Are you?
No, I don't know. It's all so mixed up. She's everything I ever wanted.
Who?
Polly. Cool, smart.
Sure. She doesn't have to worry about running a house and taking care of kids.
Yeah, I know all that, but I just have to have her, Prescott, that's all.
Where does it lead?
Nowhere. It's just free and easy and relaxed.
Where does it lead, Georgie?
I told you, nowhere.
That's not good enough for you. There are guys who can waltz in and out of these things with one dame after another. Not you.
Listen, Prescott.
Georgie, a thing like this is going to rip you apart.
I told you, it's just laughs.
You don't have that kind of humor. Break up with her.
I can't.
So it is serious.
Georgie,
break it up. Before it kills you.
What are you talking about?
I said my piece, Georgie.
Look, I've got this lead. Just give me a couple of more days to tie this one up.
Sure, sure.
Yes?
Mrs. Stanley Howarth?
Yeah, but not for long. Brown eyes? I've already had the paper served on big-hearted Stanley.
I'm a police officer.
Oh. Well, do come in.
Your husband, Mr. Stanley Howarth.
Do we have to talk about him?
About a month ago, you, your husband, and another couple, a Mr. and Mrs. Andrew Seeley...
Yeah, that's another great pair.
...were in the Museum of Indian Art.
I still don't know whose bright idea that was.
Suddenly, your husband and Mr. Seeley started swinging at each other. Why?
Why?
Yes.
Well, I don't know.
Did anything happen that would have created a fight? They just couldn't start swinging at each other for no reason at all.
Well, the truth is... neither of them's a great intellect, if you know what I mean.
Could you just tell me everything that happened while you were in that museum?
You got a one-track mind. Well, let's see. I don't know why we went there. But Betty Seeley said, let's go for laughs. Shows you where she is. So we wander around, the whole thing's a drag, and I say, Stanley, let's take off, and he says, shut up.
Why?
Stanley's a man of few words, and those are two of them. Well, anyhow, everybody's saying to Stanley, let's go. But he's just standing there, staring at this thing that looks like a bathrobe.
A bathrobe?
Well, no, it ain't a bathrobe. It's one of those old Indian robes, and he's staring at it like he's hypnotized.
Yes?
So, Andy Seeley puts his hand on Stanley's arm and says, let's go. And Stanley pushes him away and says, you're the one who ruined my life, and on account of you, I'm a crook today.
What did he mean by that?
Well, Stanley and Andy, they're partners. And they put together deals. And all I can say is they never lose money.
Then what?
Oh, I never seen Stanley so mad. Or Andy either. Each accused the other guy of dragging them down. You know what I mean? I don't know what got into either of them. And they started slugging. I mean, they'd have killed each other. Well, it took the museum guards and the cops.
I know. They were booked and then released on bond. What happened later?
These two crazy guys, these two nuts, they actually gave away all their money.
What?
Well, fortunately, I got some of Stanley's in my name. But they spent days in the office investigating worthy causes, and they just got rid of all they owned.
Could I see your husband?
Yeah, sure. If you want to go to India to look for him.
He went to India?
Well, was it India or Africa? I don't know. Might have been South America.
Why?
To do good work. Can you tie a thing like that? Any wonder I want to ditch him?
Well, thank you very much, Mrs. Howarth.
Anytime. And now that you know the way, don't be a stranger.
Terry, try to think.
I can't remember nothing, Lieutenant.
You were looking at something.
I don't remember.
Were you looking at anything special?
I can't recall.
Were you looking at a robe?
A robe?
Yes, a robe.
Well, I think maybe...
Try to remember. A robe, Terry. Would a robe mean anything to you?
Well, she wanted me to go away from the robe. Yeah, that's what she wanted me to do.
Is that why you killed her?
She said, what's so fascinating about that little old thing? It's like some old lady's bathrobe. Ancient ceremonial robe. High priest of the wolf clan. And she wanted me to go away from the robe, and so...
Yes?
The robe told me to kill her.
How could a robe tell you to kill her?
Well, it's what it told me.
You mean the robe was able to speak?
No. It wasn't in words. It was a force inside of me. Please, Lieutenant, please. But right now I feel so weak, so tired. And I don't know what I'm saying. Please, let me alone.
What you're saying is crazy.
Okay, I killed her. Everybody saw me kill her. Now, I say that robe made me do it. You say it's crazy? Okay, it's crazy. Now, let me alone.
What does science have to say on the subject? Science, in its wisdom, states that matter cannot be destroyed. Philosophers agree in principle because they claim that ideas cannot be killed. So if there was something in that ceremonial robe originally, who is to say it isn't there yet? It's been there for 1,000 years, and it will still be there in a few moments when I return with Act 3.
Driving a car you knew you were going to buy the minute you saw it. Skyhawk. Buick Skyhawk. You just knew a car this streamlined would be easy on gas, and you were right. In published EPA mileage test results, Skyhawk got 25 miles per gallon on the open road and 16 in the city. Skyhawk. It's rakish, it's low slung, it looks European, but it's a Buick.
Living free.
Cities are built on the ruins of others. And so what we have is not something that is brand new, but usually is just another layer. And if we dig into the ground, we find the things of those people who have come and gone before our time. But we don't have to dig to find the ideas and the forces and the spirits that move them. Those can be felt everywhere, especially by men and women who are waiting and hoping for something to change the course of their lives. Detective Lieutenant George Miller has been involved with people like that lately. As a matter of fact, Lieutenant Miller is in the midst of a change in his own life. He may or may not be aware of it.
Excuse me.
Yes?
Are you Mr. Kenneth Underwood?
Yes.
I'm a police detective. I was told at your apartment that you could be found here in the park.
And now that you found me?
There was an incident at the museum.
A sudden aberration. Over and done with it.
Is that so? You were looking at that robe in the museum and you suddenly went... Well, I don't like to say crazy.
Sir, I don't understand what you're saying.
No, I think you do. It's happened twice again since. What can you tell me about that robe?
Why is it important?
A man killed his wife. The state of his mind at the time will decide the price he'll pay.
I read about it. They'll say he was insane.
What about that robe?
It doesn't matter. Let us say that some spirit emanated from that robe. Possessed him. It'll amount to being crazy anyhow.
Why do you say an evil spirit?
I said a spirit. You've said evil.
Well, isn't it evil if it causes a man to kill?
The robe. The spirit of the robe. Said to me, Kenneth Underwood.
Then you are saying there is a spirit in the robe.
Said to me, Kenneth Underwood. The gods gave you the gift of poetry. You've abused it. Defiled it, cheapened it. And I did. And I thought I would die then and there. And the spirit said, will you throw off this illusion of fame and be true to your gift? And I said, yes. Yes. And a great weight was lifted from my heart because I meant it.
Do you expect me to believe this?
You asked me a question. I gave you an answer.
What kind of spirit?
Some days later, I returned to the museum. I examined the robe. There's a kind of design in it. I spoke to an authority on the ancient Indian cultures. He said it was the robe of the Wolf Clan's high priest.
That's what it says on the printed card.
The Wolf Clan. The clan responsible for the moral purity of the tribe. Each month, on the third night before the full moon, every adult member of the tribe had to pass before the high priest. It's called the Night of the Wolf. And if in any heart there's hidden a guilty secret, that secret springs forth, and it either kills that person or he must kill it. I killed mine. And so I survived.
Going along with this, how do you account for those other two incidents?
Oh, pure coincidence. People happened to be standing next to the robe on that particular night. I read about them in the paper. The two men. They killed their guilty secret.
What about Terry Jessup?
The football player. He couldn't kill his. He couldn't leave his wife. In his agony, he murdered her.
Do you expect me to believe this?
That's your option. But a week from next Monday, it will once again be 3 nights before the full moon. If you have a guilty secret, Lieutenant, I wouldn't advise you to stand near that robe. Not on the night of the wolf.
Myra?
Georgie, I didn't expect you.
What do you mean you didn't expect me?
Well, honey, you usually don't get home for dinner most nights.
Well, I always call. Where are the kids?
Oh, well, you know, Tuesday's Jerry's night for the Cub Scouts. And Ginny's sleeping over at a friend's tonight. I didn't prepare anything.
That's okay. You want to go out and eat?
Well, no.
Okay, then. Let's just spend a quiet evening at home. We're entitled to it.
I don't know if I can, honey.
Why? What's the matter?
Well, you said I should get myself an interest. I did.
What do you mean?
Oh, I took up bowling.
Oh, well, that's great.
Yes. We have a neighborhood league here. And tonight's our night. Actually, I was just on my way out the door.
Oh, well, then why don't you just go ahead?
Oh, you see, Georgie, I'm captain of the team. It's an important game.
I understand.
Otherwise, I'd call it off.
Now, sure, sure.
Look, I will call them and say that something has come up.
No, huh? No. I'm going to turn in early anyhow.
Oh, you sure you don't mind?
Honey, you go out there and roll a 300 game for the old man.
Oh, silly. I'll be home early.
A glass of wine, George?
No, I don't need wine or anything else when I'm with you.
Thank you, sir.
Polly, what's going to happen to us?
What's supposed to happen?
I don't want it to end.
I don't want it to end either. So it won't end. Unless, of course, one of us changes his mind, and then... Well, that's it. Something's bothering you, George?
No. Well, every now and then, I can't help feeling what we're doing is wrong.
What we're doing happens to be what we both want to be doing.
But people don't just have the right to do what they want to do.
Why not?
Why not? Well, because.
Yes? Because?
You know something? When I'm with you, I feel anything is possible. I mean, I'm not stuck in a rut. I just feel free.
Is that bad?
I don't know why. Half the time, I don't understand what you're saying.
Half the time, I don't understand what I'm saying either.
And you're not the best-looking dame I ever saw.
Oh, thank you. This is your night for gracious compliments.
But I just can't seem to get along without you.
So? Why fight it?
Who's fighting it?
You are. Every minute. From that very first minute I saw you.
I just decided. I'm going to quit fighting it.
Starting when?
Starting right now. I'll show you.
I believe you.
How much longer you want to fool around with the museum murder case?
That's why I want to see you, Prescott. I want you to take me off it.
You're off. As of right now. What happened?
Nothing. I don't want to go near that place again.
Meaning what?
Meaning what I said.
Does that include Miss Polly Atkins?
Miss Polly Atkins is my affair.
That's very well put.
Look, what have you got for me to work on?
What I've got for you is 1 week's sick leave.
Sick leave?
You better take it.
Why?
You look terrible.
I never felt better in my life.
Don't hand me that, George. This thing with Polly is... It's killing you.
Are you out of your mind?
Down deep. You're hurting yourself. Badly. Because this thing... It's wrong.
Who says it's wrong?
Everything you were taught to believe since the day you were born says it's
that
wrong.
That doesn't make it so.
It makes it so for you.
Don't you think I'm trying? I say I'll never see her again. But the next day...
Let's not get confused with any of that. It's just wrong. That's all.
It can't be. It seems that the two of us, Polly and me, we just belong together.
Well, then divorce Myra and marry Polly.
I can't.
Why not?
I don't know why not. Maybe I love Myra.
Then get rid of Polly.
No, I love Polly, too. Is it wrong to love both of them for different reasons, for different things?
Yeah.
Who says so?
You keep asking. I keep telling. You say so. Your conscience says so.
Okay. I'll ask someone else.
Who? Who?
Nobody. Nobody you'd know.
Sure, but who is he?
A priest.
A priest? What do you think a priest is going to tell you?
This particular priest, I don't know what he's going to tell me.
Georgie, are you sure you're all right?
Yeah, Prescott, yeah. Just now, for the first time in weeks, I feel all right.
If you don't want to take the sick week, see me later for your assignment.
Sure. This is Lieutenant Miller of the police department. I want some weather information, please. What will be the third night this month before the full moon? I have to know exactly.
I can't imagine why you'd want to come here this evening, George.
Oh, I don't know. I just want to see the exhibit again.
Well, I'd think you'd seen all you wanted of it this past month.
Well, I never really looked at things before. Did you call Captain Prescott?
Yeah. Now, why do you want him to be here?
Did he say he'd come?
He should be here any minute. Well, why do you want him?
I may need him.
For what?
Maybe for nothing. I hope for nothing.
Georgie! What's this all about?
Oh, Prescott, I'd like you to meet Miss Atkins.
Oh, we met on the phone.
How do you do? Now, Georgie, what do you want me to see?
I want to show you a robe.
A robe?
Yes. Right there.
That? That moth-eaten looking thing? What's the point?
It belongs to the priest. The one I said I was going to see.
Miss Atkins, you know what Georgie is talking about?
The robe of the high priest of the Wolf Clan. George, you're pale. Something the matter?
Polly, do you believe with all your heart that you and I, we two, we're right?
Oh, I believe it, George. I believe it. But...
Don't say any more. Prescott, have you got anything to hide? Anything on your conscience?
Everybody's got something on his conscience.
No, I'm talking about something wrong that's vital to your life.
Georgie, I don't like the way you look.
You don't feel a terrible pain in your head?
Georgie.
You don't feel a tightness? It's so tight in your chest.
I think we better call a doctor.
Oh, your whole body's not on fire?
George.
On fire? Oh, then you're safe. It's me.
I'll telephone for...
No, don't go. Don't.
George, all she wants to do
is... No, I won't give her up. I won't. I can't, no matter what you say. I won't give her up. I'll kill her first.
George.
I'll kill myself.
George, put that knife back.
It's the same knife that other man used.
George. I won't give her up. I love
George.
Her.
Wait a minute.
No, let... Put,
George.
No, I have to kill her.
Hold on.
It's the order of the high priest.
George, drop it. Drop it.
I have to. I have to.
George.
Polly.
Yeah.
Polly, I'm sorry.
Quick, call an ambulance.
No. No, don't. Father, the high priest, he said, funny, he said, drive her out of your heart, even if it kills you. I drove you out of my heart, and now I have no heart at all.
Who knows who sentenced Lieutenant George Miller to death? A conscience, which everyone has? A sudden heart attack, which anyone can get? Or was it the verdict of the high priest of the ancient wolf clan? I'll be back shortly.
That's the end of a mystery show. I hope nobody's fooled. So long, folks, it's time to go. Thanks for staying tuned. We'll be back by and by with more of Radio Seth. A Tale to Terrify. I'll give you party and a rest. We guarantee our story will send chills right up your spine. Just make sure that you're the one
who chills the Vigneault wine.
But for now, turn on the light and open up the lock. Hope we didn't leave you in a fright or in a state of shock. We'll be back with more suspense to make your head turn gray. Brought to you with compliments of the important Vigneault Rosé.
Supported by Hublon, Hartford, Connecticut.
It has been said, when a man lives with truth, there also will justice dwell. For the man of honesty and righteousness will determine the verdict for himself. He will be his own judge, his own jury, and if justice demands it, his own executioner. On this show, we deal in poetic justice every time, and we will have another case in point for you tomorrow. We hope you will continue to be interested. Our cast included Michael Tolan, Joan Shea, E.V. Juster, Ken Harvey, and Russell Horton. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents...
Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. I'm always delighted when I come across a new gothic tale, but never more so than when it happens to be written by someone unlikely. Say, for example, Captain Frederick Marryat, who was popular in his day with young readers for his tales of sea adventure, such as Midshipman Ready. This one, however, is a savage, bloody, haunting tale of another color, or to be precise, a wolf.
What is it, Herman?
There, Father. Through the trees. The white wolf.
Give me my gun.
No, I have a bead on her already.
Why do you say her?
Because Marcella thinks it's a she-wolf. Now.
No!
Why did you knock my gun in the air?
Because, don't you see? It is not a wolf who comes to us, but a woman. A beautiful woman.
Our mystery drama, The White Wolf, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Ian Martin and stars Norman Rose and Christopher Tabori. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Exlax. I'll be back shortly with Act One. The legends of lycanthropy must be as old as man himself. And believe it or not, the werewolf, or wolfman, is still a valid phenomenon today in certain parts of the world. But that is a pathological phenomenon, a psychiatric descent into cannibalism and bestiality, which has little to do with legend. That's what this story is about, the terrible, spine-chilling transformation of man to ravening beast. The legendary spirits that haunt the Harz Mountains of Germany. and the blood-curdling phantom with the snarling mouth and flesh-destroying claws, the lips bared to reveal the great knives of the canine teeth, in the travesty of a smile that means death, the werewolf.
The damned wolf, why doesn't he be quiet?
They are incredible, Wilhelm. Somehow they smell blood.
How? The animal must be a league away. What are you? Medical doctor or witch doctor, Franz Baum?
The first, I hope. But I have also lived my life in the shadow of these mountains.
How's the boy?
We can let Herman answer that for himself. You feel better from the bleeding?
I don't know, Herr Doctor. I feel weak as a kitten still.
Of course, of course. But I think the fever has abated. Yes. Yes, give me a fresh damp cloth, Wilhelm.
Ah, the water is all but gone. I'll have Marcella bring some.
First, let us rid ourselves of this basin of blood. No sight for a young girl.
I'll throw it in the mitten.
No, no. You dare not do that. That wolf out there, whatever he is, don't do anything to attract him to your house. I will rid you of the blood I have let.
How?
I have some containers. I'll take it back to Coburg with me. I can use it for my experiments. Sleep. Sleep, my boy. And wake refreshed.
I'm afraid. That's just what I'm going to do.
Doctor, is he all right?
Of course. I gave him a draught to help him rest.
Ah. I must get my gun.
Time enough. Let me get away. It grows dark.
You are sure Herman will recover?
I have every hope. But really, Wilhelm, I must protest again. This lost woodsman's cottage on the edge of nowhere is not a place to bind your children to.
Franz, let us not argue it again. You know why I hide here like a criminal. Why do I say like a criminal? I am one in the eyes of the law. I thought you said Herman was asleep.
I hope. But you're speaking loud enough for Marcel and your little boy Caesar to hear. Sounds carry in such a small cabin. From outside as well as in, it seems.
Damned wolf.
Papa, come quickly. Caesar's terrified. He's hiding below the bed and won't come out.
No, no, hush, darling. I'm just going to get my gun.
Better I leave, Wilhelm. Once I am gone, your wolf will not trouble you, I think. I carry away in my bag the scent which tempted him here.
I don't care what tempted him here. I've put a bullet in him.
Oh, Herr Dr. Baum, why do we stay here hidden in the forest?
It is your father's whim, dear Marcella.
How is Hermann?
Your brother is resting quietly now. I'll be back to see him as soon as I may. But I think we have drawn away the fever from within him.
How can I help?
Bring him some fresh, cool towels, Marcella. See that he sleeps. Keep him...
Oh, I've got to go to Caesar. He'll be scared. Did you kill that terrible wolf, Papa?
Ah, no, just grazed him. Go tend to Caesar, Marcella.
Yes, Papa.
Where was it?
Damn near inside the house, scrabbling at a back window. An unusual creature. You know, it was pure white. With fur like ermine.
A white wolf?
Yeah, against the snow it moved like a ghost.
But at all events it is gone.
Yes.
Then I will take with me the blood scent that brought it here.
But what about Herman?
I shall return within the month, unless I can persuade you to abandon the wilderness, come back to the world. I have a deep fear there is some evil threat about you in these haunted mountains.
You mean this white wolf?
I really don't know what I mean, old friend. I am a man of science until I return to these tree-shrouded slopes, and then I become...
Become what?
Primitive, afraid of all I do not know, or am afraid to know, afraid of the dark which I must run to escape, afraid of myself because I have no resource with all my learning to stifle primeval fear. These darkening woods and tortured hills are somehow unnatural, supernatural.
My name is Herman, and I was born in the year 1763. I'm now 21 years old, and I live with my father,
my sister Marcella, who's almost 20, and my brother Caesar, who is 11, in a woodsman's cabin deep in the Harz Mountains. The nearest house to us is several leagues, and the nearest town over 25. I recite all these facts to myself, light-headed with this raging fever, and sorrowing that we must all live this isolated life. Why? I do not know. There is something quite terrible in my father's background, of which he will not speak. I wonder how long I've been ill, floating half in this world and half, perhaps, in some dread other. Now at least the pounding in my head is gone, the ache is washing away from my bones, and I feel myself coming back.
Come, Herman. That's better. Take some more soup. You need to build back your strength.
Never fear. I'm on the mend.
Thank God for Dr. Baum. Oh, why must we stay buried here?
I don't know, little one. But I think the time has come for us to get back among people again.
You think you could convince Papa?
Well, I can try. Where is Father?
Out hunting, he says. But I think he searches for only one thing.
What?
The white wolf.
The what? But that wolf meat isn't good to eat.
He's not hunting it for food. Just to kill it.
But why?
Because the stories, the legends about the spirits here in the mountains.
You mean the werewolves? That is an old wives' tale.
I don't know. Something almost human about its voice. And it doesn't sound like a man, but like a woman.
A woman?
Yes. You know something, Herman? Why, I am really most afraid.
Why?
Because I think it is me she really comes for. You hear? As if she were calling me.
Well, that's stopping your white wolf. Father's killed her.
No. He missed her again. He always misses.
My little sister, you give me 3 or 4 days to mend my health with your good soups and your good cooking, and I will shoot your white wolf for you. In the days after my sister had told me of the white wolf, my dreams had been haunted by visions of the animal's shape twisting and coiling into a pillar of steam which gradually congealed in the cold into the body of a woman, with corded arms like the feet of some prehensile bird and huge talons built to rip and tear. Within the week, I felt myself again, so much myself, that one morning when we heard... Well, this time I resolved that I should go along with my father.
Ah, it is bitter cold. The snow makes heavy going, Herman. Are you sure you are up to this?
I'm fine now, Father. And I want at least one glimpse of this white wolf of yours.
Not mine till I put a bullet through its head.
Father, why must we stay buried in this wilderness? Why don't we forget the wolf and this rough life and go back to Coburg?
It is not the first time you have asked the question.
Nor the last.
Very well, you are old enough to know. Let us get out of the wind and under the protection of the trees. And while we build a fire to warm the soup Marcella sent with us, I will tell you the truth at last. I have tried to bury the secret, but you are of age. You have a right to know. You already remember that this is not our home, that we are from Transylvania.
I remember the long journey here after our mother died.
She did not die, son. She was killed. I killed her.
What?
In those happier days, I was steward to the Margrave. I was my lord's most trusted servant, successful and happy. And in return, he had all my faith and loyalty. Until that terrible night when I returned unexpectedly from a mission he had sent me on to find him with your mother, who was so beautiful and I thought so innocent. My reaction was immediate. Before I knew it, my gun had resounded twice, and both of them were dead. No use to try to tell authorities the provocation. To murder such an eminent man had no justification in their eyes, nor in the laws of that feudal state. I gathered all my money and the three of you children and fled to this retreat where we live now. Herman, that is the way of it. Blame me or not as you will. I carry the burden of it on my shoulders, sure that Almighty God will visit me someday with the punishment I have tried so hard to avoid. But what is that?
There. Through the trees, just beyond the turn that comes into this clearing.
The white wolf. My gun.
No. I have a bead on it already. I may have better luck than you, Father. Shh. Don't move.
Wait. Wait till you see it clear. And make sure.
I have her right in my sight.
Her?
Marcella thinks the wolf is a female. And now... Why did you knock the gun in the air?
Herman, don't you see? It is not a wolf who comes to us. It is a woman. And a beautiful one at that.
How fortunate that young Herman did not kill this lovely woman who had materialized as though out of nowhere. Or would it have been, in hindsight, so terrible a thing? Let's wait for the woman to declare herself first, before we judge. I shall be back shortly with Act Two. For a moment, Herman and his father are transfixed. The older man by the dark beauty of the woman, who, even stumbling and reeling from exhaustion, manages to retain an air of grace. The younger man, appalled that, but for his father's hastily flung arm that allowed the carefully aimed gun to discharge harmlessly in the air, he might have ended her life. Then, suddenly coming out of shock, both men rush to her aid.
Are you all right, Fräulein?
Just tired and frozen. Oh, my father?
Come to the fire and warm yourself. Where is your father?
The horse tumbled, and we were both thrown from it. I landed in the snow. But my father, he must have hit his head on a rock. I couldn't rouse him, and our horse ran away.
You stay with my father, and I'll see to yours. I ran quickly into the forest by the path from which she had appeared. Racing through the twists and turns, I seemed to be in some enchanted palace. The snow-laden trees, frozen by the cold, forming a shimmering, otherworldly ceiling over my head. Before I knew it, I was slithering and slipping into a declivity. Lying at the bottom, facing me, was the figure of a man richly dressed in a velvet tunic overlaid with a magnificent cape trimmed in fur. Sir?
I think I must have been stunned a moment. Never mind that. My daughter?
Have no fear, sir. She's with my father. Not over 200 yards from here. She found us and sent us to your aid.
Oh, thanks be to God. We were both at the end of our tether. Kranz, did you say your name was?
Jamanherr.
Your father could not by any chance be... Wilhelm Kranz?
Yes, that's his name.
Must be fate. Help me to my feet, boy, and onto my horse. Then lead me to my daughter and your father.
And that is how we discovered and brought Manfred of Barnsdorf and his daughter Christina into our home and into our lives. From the beginning, our father was enchanted with her silvery voice and her ethereal beauty, and of course, by the common heritage that we shared with Manfred.
It is fortunate we found you hunting.
I was only lured outside in pursuit of a large white wolf, which has been haunting our premises of late.
Yes.
Our quarters are small, but you are welcome to shelter here for as long as it takes you to recover. You said you come from Transylvania.
Even so, mein Herr. I was a chamberlain in the service of the House of Verneigen.
even as I once was to the Margrave of Bittersteiner. But why would you leave such a fine position?
You may well ask. My master conceived a desire for my daughter, not as legal wife, but simply to use for his pleasure. And it ended up by my giving him a few inches of my hunting knife.
Then we are brothers in misfortune, my dear sir.
Ah, brother indeed. You need not renew your grief by telling me your story, which I know only too well. We are comrades in misfortune.
Well, you shall make this your home as long as you desire.
Did you hear, Marcella?
Yes, brother.
It seems our family is to be enlarged.
Oh, I pray not.
Why?
I don't know. I cannot bear to look on that woman. For all her beauty, she frightens me so.
Although I was fascinated with Christina, some deep chord in me echoed Marcella's fear. Yet it seemed unreasonable, for Christina was a lovely woman, her features classically molded. Her mouth was a dark red, startlingly vivid against the pastel of her other color, and somewhat larger when it was open, revealing the most brilliantly white teeth I have ever beheld. I'll never forget the night I heard my father and Manfred talking together almost a month after they had come to live with us.
If it is Christina's will, of course you may have my daughter's hand in marriage. And I shall leave you now that my head has mended and find habitation elsewhere.
Why not remain here, Manfred?
No, I am called elsewhere.
But I...
Let what I say suffice. Ask no more questions. You may have my child.
I thank you for her truly, and will duly value her. There is, however, one difficulty.
I can guess what you would say. There is no priest here in this wild country, nor is there law to bind. Still, there must pass between you some ceremony to satisfy a father.
Of course, but what?
Will you consent to marry her after my fashion?
Yes, I will.
Then I shall marry you directly. Christina!
Yes, Father?
I wish you in here directly.
Coming.
I will get my children.
No need. This is amongst us elders.
What is your wish, Father?
Less my wish than yours. You wish to marry Wilhelm?
Ah, if it is his wish, it is my dearest one.
Then come. Take hands.
What is that?
Your wedding march. You have her hand?
Yes.
Then swear by all the spirits of the Heart Mountain.
I swear, but why not by heaven?
Because it is not my humor. If I prefer an oath less binding, will you deny me?
Do you want me to swear by what I do not believe?
Will you be married, or shall I take my daughter away with me?
What will you have me swear?
Swear by all the spirits of the Harz Mountains, by all their power for good and evil, that you take Christina to be your lawful wedded wife, that you will protect her, cherish her, and love her, that your hand shall never be raised against her to harm her.
I do solemnly swear.
And swear that if you fail in this vow, may all the vengeance of the spirits fall upon you and your children. May their flesh be torn from their limbs and their bones blanch in the wilderness, and that to this oath you pledge their blood. Swear!
I swear!
Such was the second marriage of my father. From the inner room of the cottage, peering through a crack in the door, we three children watched, I with an arm about Caesar, who was struck dumb, and my sister Marcella, who was trembling from hand to foot with fright and despair. The next morning, our life with our stepmother began.
Marcella, come here at once.
Yes?
Oh, Marcella.
I'm sorry.
Yes? Who?
Yes. Mother.
You find it so difficult to say?
Yes. No. I mean, just strange.
How do you mean, strange?
Just that my real mother has been... I mean, we have had no mother for so long that it's hard to say.
You will learn to say it and to treat me as one and to obey me. All of you. And when I call, I want you to come quicker.
Sorry,
who?
I'm sorry, Mother. I was preparing a soup for
who
the
told
dinner.
You to do that?
Why, no one. But I always
from
cook
now
for...
on, I will be in charge of what we eat. You will cook and clean and wash the dishes and do the household chores. But I decide what we eat and how we eat it.
Yes, Mother.
That's better. Now, you can prepare the vegetables and set the table. I will prepare the meat.
Herman, wake up.
Well, what is it?
Shh, it's her.
Who?
The stepmother. She's gone out.
Gone out?
Yes. Gone out the door and in her night clothes.
Are you sure? In this winter weather, not dressed, with snow on the ground? Good Lord! There's a wolf, she'll be torn to pieces. But apparently, she bore a charmed life. For a few minutes later, we watched her return, still in her nightdress. She went to a pail of water, washed her hands and face carefully, and returned to bed. All this, I may say, I watched as in a dream, for my fever was coming back on me. So much so, I had to take to my bed again, and through the days was able to watch how cruel and demanding my stepmother was to Marcella and Caesar, and to learn that every night, the moon now being full, she stole outside in her nightdress to Rome.
Herman, wake up. Oh, wake up.
Yes, I'm awake. I'm awake.
Forgive me for bothering you when you were sick. But I'm almost out of my mind.
But what is it, dear sister?
Her again. She's out prowling the night. And it's bitter cold with the snow coming down. It's not human. Listen to that.
I'm almost ready to pray the wolves might get her.
They'll never get her. It isn't wolves. Only one. I looked out of the window. The moon is full and high. It's that special one. The white wolf.
Who fired that shot?
Oh, he must have been Caesar.
Caesar?
Yes. He knew you were sick, and he's been bragging to me how he could take your place and guard us all. Oh, that's why I woke you. Somehow he followed her into the night.
Well, at least he seems to have driven off the wolf. Marcella, help me out of bed.
No, you have the fever, and I...
What's that?
Shh, it's her. Her dress all bloody. And she's alone. But where? Oh, dear sweet God. Where is our little brother?
Behind the door, the watching girl suddenly feels the blood drain from her head, and a wave of faintness makes her reach for support. In the room outside, the woman turns, moving silently to her bedroom, her wide mouth open in a caricature of a smile. There is blood on her gleaming teeth. I shall return shortly with Act Three. The moon is now obscured by dark clouds heavy with snow. Outside the cabin, the snow is pouring down. And what might be a small figure dark against the snow has now become only a minor unevenness in the white carpet. Inside the cottage, Marcella, noticing her brother's weakness, has gone to his aid.
Herman, brother, let me help you lie down.
No.
I'm all right. You watch her. What is she doing now?
She's going into their bedroom. Shh. Wait.
Who is it?
Lie still, dearest. It's only me. I have lighted the fire to warm some water. I'm not quite well.
What? I'll get up, Christina.
No need. It's nothing. I can manage myself.
Tell me, what is she doing now?
Stirring up the fire. And now she is changing her linen and... Oh, her right leg is bleeding. This is...
Wait. Let me see. For myself. As I watched in horror, half supported by my little sister, I saw the wound in her leg. There was no mistaking that a bullet had grazed her. I fought back the red mist that was beginning to swim before my eyes long enough to see her remove those parts of clothing that were stained with blood and burn them in the fire after bandaging her leg. Then as she sat huddled before the flames, the last thing I saw was her wiping her lips daintily and casting the kerchief into the roaring blaze. When I woke up, Marcella was sitting in a chair by my bed.
All right, Herman?
Yes. I feel better, but weak.
The fever's gone.
You were with me all night?
Yes. I was afraid to go to bed. She's still sitting there in front of the fire.
And Caesar, did he come back?
No. He never returned. Oh, Hem, where is he? How was she wounded unless it was from his gun? And if that's how she was wounded, and that means that she's...
Morning, Christina, my dear. You're up and about early.
I thought to make you a breakfast.
Why? Where is Marcella and the boy?
Hey, quick, go ask him, where is Caesar?
All right.
Oh, there you are, Marcella. What are you doing in Herman's room?
If you please, Father. Herman has the fever again. He cannot rise from his bed. Where is my little brother, Caesar?
Is he not in his room?
No, his bed has not been slept in. And he is nowhere in the house.
Oh, merciful heavens. Perhaps that's what woke me. I was restless and not feeling well, and I thought I heard the door latch opening. But when I came out, the room was empty. Why would the boy...
What is it, Christina?
My dear husband, nothing, I hope. But your gun is missing. It's no longer hanging over the chimney.
Father, Papa, I thought I heard the white wolf last night, and...
Hush, child, the little boy... Christina, hand me my broad axe.
Leaning weakly against the door, I had heard and seen all this. And when my father went out without another word in the short while he was gone, I was able to dress myself so that I was just coming out into the main room as he returned.
Caesar! Oh, no!
No, clear the table, Christina, so I may lay him down.
Yes, husband.
Stop your weeping, girl, and help her.
Yes, Papa. You may put him down now, Wilhelm.
Yes. Ah, poor, broken little body. Savaged and mangled.
The boy must have taken your gun down and gone after some wolf. But the animal was too powerful for him. Oh, poor child. A dear price to pay for such rashness.
For 3 days, while the family mourned, I lay in a stupor. You see, my days and nights were filled with fevered dreams, through which a great white wolf ran snarling, slashing at me with gleaming white fangs. Waking sometimes, I seemed to see my stepmother's face floating above me. And through my twisting, fevered tossings, again and again with the looming of night beneath my window about the house, I heard the growl of a wolf. Till one day, I came back to my senses to find Marcella sitting beside me, holding my hand.
Oh, you're awake. Can I get you something?
No. I'm all right again, I think. How
How long have I been...
Almost a week.
Are you all right?
Yes.
But Caesar... Oh, I seem to remember Marcella.
He's dead, Mother dear. Every day I've wanted to go to his grave and pray. Papa has kept us all here in mourning. Today, Father went. My constant urging to make sure that all was well.
And was it?
He hasn't returned yet.
And the stepmother...
I'll be glad to know that I'm in the best of health. I'm sorry for your indisposition. You must be very weak.
Thank you, but I'll soon have my strength back. Dr. Baum is due to return soon. He'll have me on my feet in no time. For that matter, I feel fine now.
Where is everyone?
In Herman's room, husband dear.
Can you imagine, Christina, that those wolves, perdition take their whole species, have contrived to dig up my poor boy, and there is nothing left but his bones?
Oh, no. No, that's impossible.
Not so, Papa. A wolf growls under our window every night.
Why didn't you tell me, Marcella? You wake me the next time you hear it.
I will,
Wilhelm. Herman is much better, and everything is under control here. But you, poor husband, you've had such a shock. Come away with me. Let me soothe you in your grief.
But how could they have moved those stones?
What were you going to say to Father?
I was going to say that all this week while you lay in fever and Father mourned, every night without fail, she left after midnight and was gone till early morning hours. Where do you think she went?
I shudder to imagine. But one thing I do know, you or I could be next. We must get away from here.
It cannot be too soon for me. The moment you are strong enough.
Yes, I agree. Until then, we must stay together, always.
Except when Papa is in the house. You're safe with him. But he could be in danger, too.
Well, it's a danger he'll have to face. Perhaps this is his retribution for killing our mother. Remember, I told you.
Yes. But first, we must think of you. And then when the time comes, we will do what has to be done.
When the time comes. How bitterly I blame myself for not moving immediately, as I should have. Dr. Baum arrived suddenly, just as I had a full remission of my fevers and my weakness. I was still abed, but ready to rise. More ready, I suppose, than the good doctor realized, else I would never have heard his fatal words.
These anemic conditions, a kind of cancer of the blood for which there is no known cure yet. Some colleagues lean to the name leukemia, but even in the enlightened 18th century, we have no way to stop it from being terminal.
How long?
Knows exactly. A week, a month, and certainly not much longer. Probably sooner than later.
I stumbled away from inside the front door where I had been listening. I fell on my bed and wept. Why? Why had God singled me out for this fate? By that very night, I was to know. It was shortly before twilight when the doctor left. An hour, perhaps a little longer, had passed. And suddenly, I was summoned out of my melancholy by... Marcella! Marcella! Father, where is she?
She went out to pick some herbs for dinner.
No, I don't mean my sister. I mean your wife.
Christina, out walking.
Not Christina. She is the White Wolf. Don't you know what you married?
Oh, Herman, Herman, my poor boy. You are under the influence of a fever. You don't know what you're saying.
Oh, don't I? Well, look. There, you see.
That damn White Wolf. Give me my gun. What is it, Christina? What is it?
Did you see a White Wolf?
Yes, but what is it?
Oh, it's too horrible to think of. Marcella. Oh, no. No, no, I can't say it. She's...
Not dead.
I'm afraid so, my loving stepson. That wolf has torn her to pieces.
For several days, I thought my father would never recover from the shock of losing his second child. I was numb myself. Together we buried her, although it was 2 days before he could bear to consign Marcella to what he called her last resting place. If only that could have been true. But the monster was not yet satisfied, nor was I. On the third night after my sister was buried, I watched that foul woman, or whatever she was, rise and leave the house. Immediately, I went and wakened my father.
Who is it?
It's Herman, father. You come with me.
But where are we going? What are you doing with my gun?
We're going to kill the white wolf. But first, I want you to see her for what she really is. It was bright moonlight as I led my father to my sister's grave. And there, oh, too ghastly to relate, was my stepmother in her white nightgown tearing away the stones piled above the grave. She was frantic with haste. In a moment, she was in the grave and ready to rend the sweet flesh apart with her hands, ready to devour it.
Oh, great God in heaven.
Your wife, or what passes for one, see what you sold yourself and us too. This time, I will make sure there is no miss. She dropped like a stone, a bullet through her head. We rushed to the grave. But imagine our horror to find, lying across the remains of my dead sister, not my stepmother, but the body of a large white wolf.
What have you done to my daughter, Wilhelm? Where is she?
Where she should be, Manfred of Bonstorff, where fiends belong, in hell, I hope.
Remember your oath that you would never harm her.
I made no compact with evil spirits.
You did. And if you failed in your vow, your children were to meet the vengeance of the spirits, to perish and their bones blanch in the wilderness, as yours shall do for what you have done to my daughter. A bullet for a bullet. But my daughter is immortal and will wreak her revenge on the last of your blood. Up, Christina, up!
Great weakness was upon me again, and I watched transfixed as in a flare of lightning the body of the wolf twitched and then dissolved in a blinding white light, out of which Christina appeared. Taking her father's hands, she leapt up behind them on the horse, her voice carrying on the wind as they disappeared.
I will be back for you, Herman. Never fear. I will be back.
Somehow I brought my father home to die. And somehow I buried him beside my sister and my brother. Then the fever overwhelmed me. I lie now in my bed, weak and helpless, waiting for her to come, the white wolf, the glistening teeth bared, the fangs ready to sink into my throat and slake her insatiable thirst on the blood which first attracted her to this mountain cottage. I wait in eager anticipation. No bullet, no dagger, no mortal means could damage this white wolf. Only the tainted blood which flows through my veins. And so, by an ironic twist of the Almighty, will bring her to the death she so richly deserves. Come, Ilion, come. Sink your fangs and drink my blood so that in dying I can send you to burn to hell for all eternity.
I know there is a move afoot to persuade us that the wolf is a much maligned creature, that he is a loving, a good companion, and never kills except for food and sustenance. I'm sure it may be so, but I'll take it on faith. I don't want to prove it by testing the theory. Personally, every time I hear a wolf howl, which is not often, I'm glad to say, I'm tempted to revert to childhood and hide my head under the nearest blanket. Our cast included Norman Rose, Christopher Tabori, Jada Rowland, Ann Shepherd, and Paul Tripp. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown.
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Sooner or later, when you least expect it, there comes a point of no return, a dead end from which there seems no escape, a moment in time, a moment of crisis.
Of course, that unmasking a werewolf is actually a very simple task.
With that proclamation, Professor Julius Vilkman, student of the supernatural, settles back in his train seat and puffs thoughtfully on his briar pipe as the ancient locomotive labors up the twisting spur line that threads through Montana's Purcell Mountains. The sprawling stands of pine and Douglas fir grow denser, choking off much of the thin sunlight. But Professor Vilkman takes little notice of the scenery, for he's preoccupied with the singular mission on which he and a reporter, Larry Raglan, have just embarked. In a few moments, Crisis presents Gerald Douglas Miller's 20th century rendition of a timeless tale of suspense and horror. The Vilkman Theory. And now, with script by Roger Millen, Act One of the Vilkman Theory.
My statement needs no qualification, Mr. Raglan. Given the proper field experience, and I dare say even you could unmask a werewolf.
Yeah, with the help of an electric razor, yeah.
Hmm?
Oh, skip it. Listen, Professor, I got an editor has his heart set on a werewolf story, and so far all I've got is your name and my name and the name of this Toonerville town up in the sticks. Now, level with me. You really believe there are such things as werewolves?
Well, I suppose next you'll ask me if the Loch Ness Monster really exists.
Save that for another assignment, okay?
Mr. Eggman, if you had acquainted yourself with my published research on lycanthropy, you would know where I stand on the issue.
Lycanthropy?
The phenomenon of werewolves.
Oh.
Yes, I'm convinced that such beings live in relatively large numbers in our society. In fact, you may have even rubbed shoulders with one of them during your lifetime.
Oh, yeah. You ought to get a load of the one that checks my expense account down at the Tribune.
Very funny. Contemporary Americans, Mr. Raglan, aren't inclined to accept so-called superstitions as readily as their European cousins. Werewolves seek out environments where they are feared, and even in some instances, respected.
All right, well then, what makes you think that this ghoul in the boondocks up here is a werewolf?
Well, he, or she for that matter, may be a victim of the werefolk's occupational hazard.
Occupational?
Yes, he must keep moving, foraging, to avoid exposure.
Oh, so he hides out in the mountains. Okay. How are you going to track him down?
There are certain recognizable characteristics.
Now, don't give me that B-movie bunk about hairy palms and long forefingers and no reflection.
Mr. Raglan, you would do well not to dismiss authenticated fact.
That stuff is true?
And creature's technique. Classic examples. 5 brutal murders in 2 months' time. Each victim displaying unmistakable marks of attack. An entire community on the verge of hysteria. Classic.
Oh, I don't buy it. People go off their rockers every day. Don't have to be some supernatural reason.
Frankly, I expected and even approve of such doubt on your part, Mr. Ragland.
Huh?
The scientific world has thrived for centuries upon healthy skepticism. I only hope our quarry has not anticipated the arrival of the curious and withdrawn again.
Yeah, me too. Or this time my editor gives me the little pink slip and 2 weeks' traveling money. But right now, about the only thing I'm really sure of is neither one of us is a werewolf.
You were saying...
Our reflections, Professor. I've been noticing there in the train window beside you. That should at least take us off the list of suspects.
Oh yes. Very astute. I have taken pains to conclude that about you before allowing you to accompany me.
You're kidding.
Hardly. You see, during 40 years' work, I have grown quite unpopular with such denizens of the dark, having shed a good deal of unwelcome light on their activities, and also, I must say...
Stop raving, baby. In the line, folks.
So this is Havensdale.
Yeah, well, the name fits it. Sure is for the birds.
Yes. Hey, Raglan, there seems to be some sort of disturbance over there, beyond the station house.
Yeah. Hmm. Now, leave the bags a minute. Let's go see what's up.
Yes, it appears they're mounting a search of some kind.
Or swearing in a posse.
Yes. There's something in the air, all right.
Hey, those guys are armed to the teeth. They got their dogs out, too. I don't like the looks of this.
We'll need it hard this time.
Well, we better before that bud sucker gets somebody else.
All right. All right, everybody stand back and shut up a minute. I want Brian, Tesro, Foley, Speed over there, Cogdell, come along with me. Lumpy, you and Rube take care of Jensen, or what's left of him.
Uh-oh. You see that canvas bag?
Yes, I'm afraid there's been another victim.
Now, those I've deputized, get your gear together. The rest of you go on home. And lock your doors.
Say, track catch someone?
Ain't someone. It's something. Say, who are you fellows?
Well, we're from down in the city.
Roof, I thought I told you and Lumpy to get that bag down to my... Say, who you got here?
I am Professor Julius Wilcombe, and this is my traveling companion, Mr. Ragland.
I'm Sheriff Hangerford. What's your business here?
Reporter, South Bend Tribune. Who's in the canvas bag?
The name was Jensen.
Me and Lumpy found him, didn't we, Lump?
Yep, sure did.
Yeah, we was coming back from the mill about an hour ago.
How do you think he died, Sheriff?
Well, I'd say a wolf got him, only they never attacked a man this close to civilization. Only one other thing could have done it.
Yeah?
Same thing as killed five other townspeople.
Ah, come on, you mean a werewolf?
Sheriff, may I have a look at the victim?
Well, I guess you can.
So, you got a posse going out?
Same as we done before.
Clues?
Can't say yet. Well, here he is, what's left of him. Have a look if you want to.
Yes, thank you, and that will suffice.
Say, you're going to want to take some pictures of us?
Lumpy, I told you and Roof to take Jensen over to my office. Lock him up in there. Now get going. I'll hope the hounds turn up something before dark.
You mean you're calling off the search at dark?
Hey, you damn betcha. All right, you men, now get your duffs and gear and let's move them out.
Well, so, what's the verdict, Professor?
There's no question. The condition of the body, no question. We do indeed have a werewolf on our hands.
I thought werewolves did their stuff only in the... full of the moon at night.
That has been their traditional modus operandi. But what we have here is an amendment to the body of theory concerning the transformation from human into beast. A very valuable addition to my research.
Okay, have it your own way. Hey, let's get inside. I'm freezing my ears off.
I was about to suggest we retire to some central location where we may observe a good cross-section of the citizenry.
What about that tavern over there?
It seems well populated. By all means. And I'm sure you could use some refreshment.
Yeah, only if you're buying. I won't touch my bar tabs at the Trib with steel tongs anymore.
Hey, you guys gonna take any pictures?
Merely because our knowledge of empirical facts surrounding werewolves, vampires, and so on is meager, we cannot rule out their very existence. We cannot see the atom, but that in no way diminishes the reality of the atomic bomb, does it?
I'll drink to that.
And so my mission is one of assembling facts, of distilling accepted scientific data from centuries-old folklore. Yes, of wrestling with seemingly contradictory evidence, such as that which we happened upon today.
You're not doing much wrestling at the moment, though, I notice. You think our hairy buddy is going to belly up to the bar and order a belt of raw hamburger or something?
Nothing like that. But with all that has transpired in this isolated community in these last weeks, I believe our werewolf has been forced to become a social animal, mingling, so as to avoid detection by merely being different. You see?
Okay, not bad. Only...
Only what, Mr. Ragland?
Well, ever since we began sipping suds in this saloon, you haven't given more than a glance at the locals who've been through here.
Correct. But I have had the assistance of a large mirror hung on the back wall. Behind you, see? Hmm? Behind you.
Well, I'll be. Yeah, I forgot the old mirror gimmick. Well, how about it? Is anybody in here shy of reflection?
Not exactly. Pretend you're trying to attract the bartender, and as you turn toward the bar, take careful note of that brute of a man standing alone just to the left of the entrance.
Huh? Just a minute. Holy smoke, what a giant... Hey, he's leaving. I can't tell whether he's got a reflection or not.
Exactly. From the moment he walked in, he seemed to take great care to occupy the only place in the room where he was not visible to anyone in the mirror.
So, what do we do?
I sense that this is the moment to seize the initiative. If you feel up to the risks, Mr. Ragland.
You want to tail the guy?
Of course, and at once. In pursuit of such an elusive quarry, we must follow the faintest clue.
Okay, I'll be right behind you. But I better warn you, I'm already working on our obituaries. Professor? Hey, Wilkman, there's a cabin up ahead, see?
Yes. I see, I see. I'm sure he's... Yes, he's entering it. Now I warn you, Mr. Eckler. Things usually tend to become a bit delicate at this stage. Trusting that you are a man of action as well as words, my only advice is to be prepared for anything.
Well, I'm game if you are.
Good, then come along. And be as good as to allow me to make the initial contact.
Well, here we are at the gates of hell. You do the honors, old boy.
Yeah.
How do you do?
I do just fine. Now, what do you want?
My humble apologies for disturbing you, sir. My colleagues and I are reporters. We just arrived in Ravensdale in connection with the series of strange murders which have...
You mean, all that werewolf malarkey the sheriff's been putting out? Yeah, he'd like us to think it's some werewolf because he ain't found no killer. He ain't got the killer. So Ravensdale's got a werewolf. That's what I think.
There could very well be something to what you say. Would you mind if we stepped in out of this wind?
Oh, yeah, sure. Come on here. Yeah, the place ain't much, but at least it's warm over there by the fireplace.
Ah, yes, yes. Thank you, thank you. My name is Julius Vilkman, and this is my associate, Larry Raglan.
Yeah? Just call me Hutter. Morning's coffee's still stewing out in the kitchen. We like gravy, but you're welcome to a cup.
Oh, he would be most grateful.
Yeah, a little coffee would sure hit the spot. How about it, Vilkman?
Sorry to disappoint you. I think we may relax. Raglan, it is evident that this fellow is not our werewolf.
Yeah, well, why do you say that?
Because when we shook hands, I was careful to note that his fingers and palm displayed none of the characteristics I was expecting to find.
And here he comes back.
Well, here it is, gents. Piping hot. Twice as mean.
Ah, thank you. Thank you very much, indeed. Well, actually, Mr. Hunter, I find it quite pleasant here in your snug little den.
Yeah, well, I'd rather be inside here than running out there in a day like this. Say, I was meaning to ask you, how'd you happen to end up in this part of town? It's kind of off the beaten track, ain't it?
Well, we noticed you as you were leaving the tavern a few moments ago. To be perfectly candid, Mr. Hunter, we followed you here.
You followed me?
Oh, there was nothing personal in it, mind you. But I must confess that you were actually my first prime suspect in this case.
You mean you suspected me first off of being your werewolf? Tell me, Professor, y'all ever seen a werewolf?
Not actually.
No?
No, but I dare say I am among the contemporary scientific community's most competent researchers on the subject. So if anybody could recognize one of the specimens, Mr. Hunter, I'm sure I could.
You really studied up on it, huh?
I have devoted my life to it, sir.
You must have been on the afternoon train today, then, huh?
That's correct.
Well, then you just missed my act.
Your act?
Oh, you seen the big brave sheriff and his posse, didn't you?
Why, yes, yes, of course. And I was even given an opportunity to examine, cursorily, of course, the latest victim.
Jensen.
Yes, Jensen.
Yeah.
And I interviewed again, very briefly, the two men who discovered Jensen's body.
Lumpy and Roof.
I believe those were their names.
Well, now, you've been real busy for having been in town such a short time, haven't you, Professor?
As I say, Mr. Hunter, I am convinced that at long last, I may have the satisfaction of finding a quarry in this area. A lifetime goal realized.
And you're sure you could recognize one if you've seen him, huh?
I have no doubt of it. Now, Mr. Hunter, I see no cause for such levity, Mr. Hunter.
Oh, you're some expert, Professor. You really nailed me for a werewolf. Hey, even in a few seconds down at the tavern. It's good, Professor. It's very good.
You mean that...
Sure. Your 40 years of research paid off. You got yourself a real live werewolf.
I knew it.
Even now, what you gonna do about it?
Do? Raglan, I think this is the opportune moment for our speedy departure.
Oh, now, Professor, don't rush off. You got some more research to do.
What do you mean?
You not only found yourself one werewolf, you found yourself two, didn't you?
What are you trying to say?
How come you spotted me so quick? When you were sitting right next to another one all the way up here to Ravensdale.
What? Raglan? No. No, I don't believe it. That can't be true. Your hands, your reflection. Everything was perfectly normal.
Oh, I was on the level, Professor, when I told you all that stuff about the hairy hands and the extended fingers being B-movie stuff. It's all baloney, every bit of it. See, a bunch of us got together years and years ago and started a little propaganda campaign on our own behalf. And it's paid off, too. except for a couple of your lucky sociological notions about our close-knit little group. See, that's when some of us began to get a shade nervous about your research and decided it was time to do something about it.
But this cannot be. Not with your professional background.
Oh, I'm a real reporter, if that's what you mean. Have been for over 100 years under different names in a lot of different places. Made a perfect cover for what I really am.
Oh, God. What a fool I've been.
Now, Professor, don't carry on like that. Look at it this way. You may be the first man in history ever to interview 2 werewolves at once.
Sure. Tell you what, Professor. You not only get to interview us, but you know what else? You're going to stay for dinner.
Talk about the cushy life of a professor. Vilkman is one scientist who puts his all into his research. The Vilkman Theory was written by Gerald Douglas Miller and adapted for Crisis by Roger Millen. Our players included Douglas Young, Jim Kelly, Bill Swain, Roger Millen, John Walker, and yours truly, Jim French. Our director was Pat French.
Have a good evening and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwig from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian of Seraphic Panoply and Stevie Farnaby.
What you doing in my chair?
Is that for me?
What?